Welcome back to part two on racism with Ray Reese on criminal justice knowledge.
There's so many different ways that it can be addressed in terms mm-hmm. of looking at biases and things. Mm-hmm. To provide an example with the Colton Bushi, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. we all know the jury selection, and they had to go to a different location, or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is too much of a loaded question, but what could have been done differently where there could have been an actual fair jury selection in that case? Is it that we need to make sure that, because unfortunately the one that had been killed was mm-hmm. indigenous, however mm-hmm. the one that did the killing was mm-hmm. white, there's been such a debate when that happened, mm-hmm. if the jury had been mainly indigenous people, it could have been a different outcome, but then mm-hmm. it'd be fair, and if now it's white and it's not fair to the indigenous community.
Right.
Is there something that we can do? Because the jury of our peers, unfortunately, our peers have come in with biases.
Of course, absolutely.
Even if the judge and the lawyers didn't, they ultimately in a jury case still have that
absolutely
decision to make.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good question. And the Colton Bushi case, incredibly tragic. And it's a good question. It's a difficult question. So a reevaluation mm-hmm. of jury selection for sure, because the way in which juries are selected is incredibly, incredibly biased and mm-hmm. incredibly prejudicial. And a lot of folks did not know the process in which people are actually selected for jury duty. So I always say it's interesting that even for people who are refugees and immigrants, we say to them, pay taxes, but you can't vote. If you're a permanent resident, not a refugee. If you're a permanent resident, mm-hmm. you pay taxes, you work, but you actually can't vote.
Right.
Which is really interesting if you think about how that works bureaucratically, politically, and in terms of entrenching power, right? So jury selection, for sure, the way in which it's the process is highly problematic. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that a different jury would have had a different outcome? Not necessarily. We don't know.
Right.
But it would have meant that in terms of impartiality and jurisprudence in a democratic society, that would have at least been, mm-hmm. Ascribed. That would have happened, ideally, right? We don't want to make the assumption that because... I actually think it was a tragedy there was no indigenous folks on mm-hmm. that jury. I think it was mm-hmm. an absolute tragedy, right? And it was also the maintenance of white supremacy and white power when that was done. And it was allowed to happen, mm-hmm. right? And then post-verdict, everybody's up in arms about changing the process. And why is it post-verdict? Because this has been happening for years. Mm-hmm. It's not new. This is how jury selection has been for years. So, yes, it should have been a tragedy with Colton Bushi, but it should have been a tragedy before when juries were all white in other cases, mm-hmm. right? So for sure, a horrible tragedy definitely needs to be redone the way they promised that, right? Because again, if you're basing your jury pool on property ownership, we know that the majority of folks who own property in this country are white folks. They're mm-hmm. not people who are racialized. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean, right?
Yeah, it's something that needs to be a shift needs to occur
absolutely.
In our society as a whole.
Absolutely.
Which sort of leads me into my next question of bias. We all have implicit bias.
Absolutely.
How do we, as the students going into the workforce, mm-hmm. how would we not have our implicit bias affect our jobs? If we're a police officer we're going to being a lawyer or a judge, how do we make sure that we understand where implicit biases are and we're mm-hmm. not arresting someone because of that?
Right. So I think that's one of the most interesting things around this whole the discourse of implicit bias that's kind of burgeoning right now mm-hmm. in the field of academia and social service work is that I don't believe you cannot divorce yourself from your biases. Mm-hmm. You can't. So none of us can. Right. So the question for me is not how can we remove ourselves from it, but we have to take hold of it and acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. So we have to acknowledge our biases and then try and figure out and work through how we're going to work our best to try not to let those biases affect the decisions that we make.
Right.
Which will be incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
Because there's no way that it can't, mm-hmm. right? So it's interesting. It's like, okay, does the officer, stop the person who's driving the Mercedes-Benz who's racialized because they were speeding, okay, yes, they were speeding. Mm-hmm. And then when you stop them, then does that then lead to a search and, like, whatever, you know what I mean, the next
right.
process? And is that because you're making assumptions about mm-hmm. who this person is that's driving this car because mm-hmm. they're racialized, right? So it's not a situation where we can ever just stop being biased,
yeah,
right? What we need to do is acknowledge our bias and figure mm-hmm. out, okay, so I now know that I have these biases, I'm going to do the work to try not to let this affect the way that I'm going to work with people in the system.
Right.
Right? And that's the harder piece for mm-hmm. me. Right? Because I think, you know, it's like, oh, I'm going to go into the field and I'm not going to be biased. No, you're going to be biased.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It's just like the judge who puts on, if you're racist before you put on the robe, you don't just stop being racist when you put
right,
on the robe
yeah.
and sit on the bench. You're still a racist, you know what I mean? You're
yeah.
still racist. So I think that's the harder thing to do, right?
Yeah.
Is to figure that piece out.
Does it work around education and being in institutions like this? Is that the answer to, not of course not, as you're saying, you can't solve that,
because,
that
right,
problem, but
right,
is that the answer
right.
to making it hopefully not infect the criminal
the
justice
system
as it is currently now?
Right. Well, okay, so you're right, education for sure, and how you educate someone,
mm-hmm.
and if that person's receptive, then you've got to be receptive.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah.
And then the type of educator that you have that is going to... you know, challenge conventional ways of thinking, right?
Mm-hmm.
The criminal justice system is already infected. Like, it's
right.
already, it's infected and affected,
yeah.
it is, by, you know, indices of racism and sexism and homophobia and
right.
Islamophobia. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's already there, right? So, working from the inside and trying to change those pieces, it's hard,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like trying to change police culture.
Right.
Right. And it's a lot of young folks go into policing and they're idealistic and they
mm-hmm.
want to do well and they
yep.
want to do good. And then the reality of the blue wall
mm-hmm.
Hits them, and you now have to make some very hard choices
right.
about your moral compass and your moral code and your ethics.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be a beat cop for the next 15, 20 years. I want to be promoted.
Right.
So what does that mean? What do I have to sacrifice? What parts of myself am I going to have to, you know, be uncomfortable with
mm-hmm.
In terms of accomplishing what I want to accomplish in my life? And that's the bigger question, because then we're talking about integrity, right?
Yeah.
So is it about the promotion, the paycheck, or is it about the social justice?
Mm-hmm.
And those are hard things, I think, for a lot of people to reconcile, right?
Yeah.
We were having this conversation earlier. I was having this conversation with another colleague, so I can't take full credit for it just being my thought, but I was with another... the prof who's a former officer, and he was saying that's one of the hardest things for people to reconcile, because
mm-hmm.
the system is muddied already. I think for people like yourselves who are going into the field,
mm-hmm.
you have to constantly remain vigilant about your social location, right?
Right.
And your biases, they will creep in, they will show up, and you will have to address them. The worst thing I think you can do is not address them. So if you realize, oh my gosh, I just treated this client differently, and you kind of take a step back and you're like, oh,
right.
shit, I treated them differently. Was it because of the way they looked? Was it because of my implicit bias?
Mm-hmm.
Am I taking stock of this? Am I doing a self-reflective piece? And those are the things that take a lot of emotional work and labor.
Right.
And people don't want to do that.
My final question to essentially try to sum up, there's so much more
sure.
to
yeah.
talk about,
yeah.
would be, is keeping this conversation going
mm-hmm.
and never stopping, essentially,
mm-hmm.
is that the way to address racism in not only the criminal justice system, but in our society?
Yeah, yeah.
Because we hear a lot, especially with the older generation, the baby
yeah.
boomer generation,
yeah.
we don't talk about that.
Yeah.
Is continuing to have these conversations with each other, is that not the answer, but is that one of the pieces that we need to continue to
yeah.
do?
No, I agree with you completely. I think, and that's how the work gets done, right? When you're in the trenches, when you're disrupting the system, and also for folks that want to be allies, right? So folks who are not racialized, for white folks that want to be allies,
mm-hmm.
the critical piece is asking yourself first why you want to be an ally.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because you're struggling with white guilt?
Right.
Is it because you give a damn? Like, why do you want to walk this path with those of us that are racialized? That is a very messy, ugly, painful, hurtful path at times,
mm-hmm.
right? It can also be really joyous and triumphant when victories take place and revolution takes hold. That's wonderful,
right?
Right? But I think that, yeah, these are the things that people have to ask themselves when they're consciously vigilant about the state of our society, is continually having these conversations. When people say something at the dinner table and you're kind of like, what? Sorry, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you check them on that, that's hard.
Yeah.
Right? But it has to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When people, you know, you see something you know, on the side of the street when you're walking or whatever the case may be. Like, the conversations continually have to happen, and that's one of the things I love the most about teaching, is that we have these conversations, or I have these conversations, and students will complain, mm-hmm. like, oh my gosh, Ray, like, okay, you've been talking about this since first semester. It's now third semester, and we will keep talking about it, because yeah. I need it to be second nature. Like, I need you to think mm-hmm. constantly and vigilantly about the way in which you walk through the world, whether you're white or racialized, and how the world responds to you,
right?
And how you respond to other people, right? Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. I think the conversations have to happen, the movements have to happen, the supports mm-hmm. have to happen. As an ally, knowing when to, you know, stand behind, stand beside, stand in front if you're asked to stand in front. Mm-hmm. Those are things that should not be taken for granted.
Right.
And that's the continual dialogue that needs to happen if we're going to, you know, even try and dismantle this, I don't know, Goliath that is
right.
that is racism, right?
Right. So yeah. It's about listening to each other. It's about understanding each other's experiences and each other's paths.
Yes. Acknowledging pain. Like
right.
you said, acknowledging when you may have been a perpetrator of mm-hmm. racism, and taking hold of that and saying, you know what, I acknowledge that I did hurt you.
Right.
And what do you need from me, as opposed to, let me tell you what I'm going to do to...
Right.
Exactly.
Actually,
you know,
listening to the other person or
yeah.
group of people.
Yeah.
This is just the tip of the iceberg
mm-hmm.
of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that is constantly in the news, and we can continue to
Absolutely.
Learn about
yeah.
every day. But for this podcast, unfortunately, we'll have to end it there. But thank you so much again for coming on today and speaking with us about this. Until next time, I'm Natalie Miller, and this has been Criminal Justice Knowledge.